Adobe Express is the quick and easy create anything app. It's my go-to for making my business stand out. From videos and social posts to flyers and logos. Search for Adobe Express to find out more and use it for free.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Immigrantly. I am your host, Sadia Khan. And I'm really psyched for today's episode because we are diving into something we can all relate to, especially those of us with immigrant backgrounds. It's this idea of home. Now, for me, home has always been a tricky concept. It's not just one place or one feeling, although I do think this notion of home has become more of a mindset. But as an immigrant, I have come to realize that every place, every physical place I've lived, shapes who I am. Yet no single place fully defines me. Lahore is home, but New York is home too. And Boston. Why not Denver? I lived in Denver for 8 years. You know, it's this in-between feeling that many of us know all too well. That's why I was really drawn to today's guest, Robert Hartwell. Now, Robert is a phenomenal Broadway performer, but today we are not talking about the stage. We are diving into his journey of restoring a historic home. For him, it's more than a renovation. It's a deeply personal project. It's about reclaiming space, honoring history, and creating a place that truly reflects who he is. And you can partake in his journey by watching the show. It's called Breaking New Ground, which is available on HBO Max. All 6 episodes are streaming now. So don't forget to check it out. It is an incredible show. You will love it, I promise.
I am Robert Hartwell. I'm a Broadway performer, educator, entrepreneur, and this is my White House.
Wow. When people come in, they realize I am royalty.
And you know what? I am so curious to explore what home means to someone who spent his career stepping into other people's stories and how he's crafting a space that is his own. So without further ado, let's get started. Hello, I can see your beautiful home in the background, and I'm loving it.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
How are you doing, Robert?
I am so good. You know, today is one of those days where you look outside and you realize, oh, it's really fall. And that feels very exciting.
You know, it's so true. Even in New York, fall has arrived. Mm-hmm. So you're in this really nice, quaint town in Massachusetts called Great Barrington. Interesting name.
Yes.
You are a New York resident. You grew up in New York. And then in 2020, you weren't feeling safe in New York, right? Mm-hmm. What was about New York that made you feel less safe?
Well, we were all going through the pandemic, and we were all also grappling with George Floyd's murder. And as a Black gay man in America, living in New York City and seeing the death toll rise every single day, it felt terrifying. Hmm. And I think any day that you walk out of your home and you are a part of a community of other, you don't even realize how hyper aware you are of your surroundings and of your life. And I knew that my central nervous system needed something different.
And that different was Great Barrington, right?
Yes, Great Barrington.
So what about this town made you feel safer?
One, it's quiet and you see nature. And in New York City, you have to work to see nature. You know, you've got to travel to Central Park or you've got to go down to Brooklyn. And this was completely different. When you're driving to the Berkshires and you're going through the Taconic State Parkway, it's an open invitation for 2 hours to breathe and to calm yourself. And there's never been a day that I've driven from New York City here to the Berkshires and not felt calmer on the other side of it. The body knows. And I think also because of the people that actually created this land and found this land before it was stolen from them, those tribes people really blessed this land, and you can feel it, and its effects are still here hundreds upon hundreds of years later.
But your journey wasn't simple. You decided to buy a 200-year-old house and do a whole restoration project. And as I was watching your journey, which is available on HBO for people to watch, I was like, oh my gosh. We did renovation of our house, our present house, but this house was built in 1969 versus 1822.
Yeah.
So tell me how it all started for you, Robert. Obviously, death was, in a way, a trigger. You've talked about it in your interviews, George Floyd's murder, your aunt passing. Talk to me about the initial process.
Thank you so much for knowing so much. It feels so good to be in a space where someone knows the story. And so I'm very grateful for that. So when I got to the house for the first time, for those that, you know, haven't seen the show on Max yet, I got here because my Aunt Paulette passed from COVID. And one Saturday afternoon, my stepmom Eileen told me, you know, pick up a magazine and go to the park. And inside of that magazine was an article about the Berkshires, essentially. And I saw a home that just looked like my dream home. And fast forward to that Monday, I came to see this home. And then on that Friday was Juneteenth, and I purchased the home. And the process was, I think, one of the greatest unfoldings in my life, because I think many times we have a goal in mind and we go achieve that goal and then we go on to the next thing. But I did not have a goal in mind. Like, I didn't, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, I'm an artist, I'm an educator. So it's usually, okay, great, I want to do X thing and get X students and make them have X result. That wasn't at all what this was. It was a life move. It was just a saying yes in a time where there was such deep no and such deep sorrow and frustration and fear. So what really this has shown me is how beautiful unfoldings can be, because my best friend, Rachel Rogers, called me the night that that post went viral and said, "What have you always wanted to do?" And I forgot that years prior, I had started designing on my own YouTube show. You know, at the time I was a Broadway performer, so I was designing Broadway star dressing rooms. And she said, do that, take that, make that happen with this home. Obviously, people are resonating with this story. Don't be afraid, like, go after it. And so that's really where the pitch then came from, to send over to the Oprah Winfrey Network and to HGTV. And that's when we partnered with Scott's Brothers Entertainment to turn it into a 6-episode show for Max. And, you know, I think it's why I always say, hold those beautiful hearts in your life so deep, because they will see bigger for you than you can see for yourself, especially in your time of great sadness or great joy, because both of those things are overwhelming and you don't always see clearly. And so you need those people that you trust and that you love that help you with your vision and your action in those seasons.
So you said your friend told you not to be afraid. What were you afraid of?
I was afraid of my privacy. I've always loved my privacy. And when I put that post up that day, I think I had maybe 2,000 Instagram followers. Yes, I had a great Broadway career, but what's amazing about Broadway is you still have your anonymity in many ways when you're a Broadway performer. When you venture into TV and film and influencer work, you become a part of mass consumption in a very different way than traditional theater. And so I feared that, you know, would something bad happen to me? And it won't, and it hasn't, you know? And I think those are these limiting beliefs, because deep down inside, your body knows that what's on the other side is actually quite great.
Were there any parts of this story or narrative that you initially wanted to keep private, but then you decided to share it with the world?
I never really had anything that I said, I don't want people to be a part of X part of my life. But I will say this, it was because I trusted my director and I knew that he understood why we were doing this project. And I felt that I could trust him with my story. I could trust him with my home. I could trust him with my family and my friends. And because of that, there was never a moment where I ever said, oh, I don't want to talk about that. In many ways, I would always say, no, I want to talk more about that, you know, and those unpopular things.
You did. You talked about budgeting and you talked about the amount that you invested in the house. You bought this house on cash, right?
Yeah.
And then you took a loan, a huge amount of loan to do all the renovations, and you ran into challenges. I could relate to so much of it because, again, I am a homeowner and I went through a similar process, but not to the extent that you did. But Robert, you are a Broadway star, a performer, and in theater, the setting often influences how story is told, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if restoring this house feels like constructing a set for your life where you could almost reframe and retell not just the story of the house, but your personal narrative for the audiences to consume. Did you see any similarities?
Oh, absolutely. In a Broadway show, you have very clear roles. You have the director, you have the choreographer, you have the costume designer, you have the set designer, and everyone is united on one cohesive vision. And I felt like that around building this home. And the idea is that you are building this world, but building it with possibility and building it with room to grow into. And so in the show on Max, you'll hear me talk about, oh, well, we need to have a king-size bed because I'm single today, but I know that one day there will be a husband. Or the bathroom in the primary bath has two shower heads for his and his shower. Again, I am single, but I know that I will not be forever. So it is building a place of possibility, you know, and in many ways, there are a lot of characters that have already been cast, if we would say. I have my best friend, I have my mom, but we're still out there auditioning for a husband and future children, you know? But it feels so full of possibility and play, because what I love about those rooms that were created with a purpose in the future, they still function so beautifully for me today. Right. So I love when my friends come and they stay in the bunk room, which is Ella's room, the little girl's room one day. It felt like a Broadway production to me of like putting all of the pieces together. And in many ways, it just made it so fun. And I think that as you're going through anything in your life, whether it is a job search or whether it is a home renovation, you have to find a way to bring the fun into the process, or it will be soul crushing. And it doesn't have to be. I believe all of these perceived hard things that we go through all have the possibility to have joy abound in them.
It's interesting you bring this up and you talk about characters, but I want to go back in time because the legacy of this house embodies other characters, right? And as you were restoring the house, you were also very curious about the history that the house entails or the stories that the walls could tell. Tell me about what you discovered and what was the most heartbreaking truth that you unraveled and what was the most endearing thing that you found?
I'll start with the most endearing thing that I found are how history and our written story leaves such clues. And so when I think of W.E.B. Du Bois, who is the co-founder of the NAACP, who was born here in Great Barrington, whose parents and grandparents were born into slavery. When I think of him, I see he talks of my home in his autobiography. And he talks of being a little boy growing up in Great Barrington and playing on a ravine off of the side of this home where he would sit and have breakfast with the Irish servants. And those servants are listed on my census of my home. And that ravine that he's talking about is literally the ravine that I am looking at as I look out of my window right now. And so endearing is how important it is to document our history, right? Because then 150 years later, I get to come back and I get to learn of him and learn of his origin story and realize that this very ground that I rest on every day and that I wake up and dream up and work on every day is the same land that this incredible Black man played and grew up and was supported and was curious and was pushed, but it produced the co-founder of the NAACP. It produced one of the greatest thinkers I think our country will ever know. And so that to me is why we write stories, why we produce stories, why we share our stories, because I do hope that one day one of my children or a niece or a nephew will go back and, you know, pull out this show and say, oh my gosh, that's where I come from. And that it brings them courage to keep going and in learning his history and in learning that W.E.B. Du Bois's mother worked for the Russell family, who this home was originally built for. It just gives you such peace and it gives you such courage that in those moments that were so difficult and truly in moments that are still very difficult, you know, you take out a loan. Okay, well, when you take out a loan, then you got to pay that thing back, you know? And so, you know, and every homeowner will tell you, it's like, all right, well, you get in the house. And then the moment you get in the house, things begin to fall apart. You know, you're like, oh, and things have not fallen apart per se in my home. But there's always something that's creaking or falls off or needs repair. And that is part of the journey. But then when you get to realize and remember who was here before you, that's the gasoline to keep going.
And a heartbreaking truth?
A heartbreaking truth that I learned during this process was really where my family really comes from. In Dinwiddie County, Virginia, and hearing their story and being on the land. You know, in the TV show, you see that I get the opportunity to go back to the land that my family was enslaved on. And even saying that is still, you can't even put it into words what that feels like, because it becomes so real. It's one thing to hear family stories or to read and study about the American slave trade. However, to be on the land where your family worked and labored and were abused, you just don't know what that does to a person. And that was heart opening. I would not say heartbreaking. I would say heart opening, because it really showed me. I always knew that I came from greatness, but to see this open field and to just know that they were there and see where we are now, it opened me to never stop fighting.
How has that changed your relationship with yourself now? Because you're not just an artist, right? Now you're someone who's reclaiming a space in history.
It makes me calmer. I just have a much greater sense of peace now. The final episode of the show, you see me putting the photos of my family and the slave schedules from Brunswick Plantation, Hartwell Plantation, on the walls of my staircase. And every day that I go up and down those stairs, I look and I see their stories, my family story on that wall, whether it's my great-grandfather's war draft card or whether it's the map of the plantation where we were enslaved or my grandfather in front of his first car that he bought in East Hampton, New York. And it just reminds me that everything is going to be okay and it's all going to work out. And it's not my job to figure it out. It's my job to trust that the future has so much for us. And I wouldn't be here if it didn't. So I just am grateful for the peace, because the process was extremely chaotic, traumatic in many ways. And I'm still alive, and I have my joy intact, and I have my peace abounding. And for that, I say thank you to the universe every morning that I wake up.
Talking about future, Robert, how do you imagine the physical space of your home? How do you think it will shape the stories you'll tell your future generations? I am curious to know what pieces of your cultural or personal heritage will you pass on? What pieces are really embedded in its walls now that weren't here before?
That's a beautiful question. Thank you for that. I want to, and I'm going to, write out everything that I learned from the experience, because there's so much that is not covered in the show. There's so much that we filmed that you just have to get it down to 50 minutes, six episodes, you know? And I want to put all of it out, because I think everyone's family, you have that grandmother or you have that great aunt that every day they are closer to their final breath. That's just how this journey works. And when they take that final breath, they also take with them those stories. And if we don't ask about those stories and document them, then they are lost.
That's true.
There is an incredible author, Lovey, and she was saying how when we don't document or we don't share, we are participating in our cultural erasure.
That's true.
And that just hit me so deeply as people of color, that we are so patriarchally conditioned to be small, to not stick out, to be quiet, to be successful, but not too successful. And it's actually erasing our family line. It's erasing our family story by doing that. And so she has been encouraging in recent writings and on social to tell those stories, to write those stories, to share those stories. And that has given me such courage. And so that's definitely something that I want to be able to give my family. Yes, there's the home. And yes, there's so many things in the walls, on the walls. And also to be able to have this document is a gift that I need to produce.
You're absolutely right. And I wonder if it's more than just patriarchy, right? It's racial hierarchy that exists in the United States. And it manifests in many forms, and it impacts so many different racial, ethnic identities within the US. But I want to bring in this notion of community, right? Because you have really openly invited people into this process through this series, and now you're thinking of writing, hopefully a book.
Yes.
Or a compilation of some sort. How has that openness reshaped your understanding of community, collective ownership, us versus them idea, public versus private?
It is being open to being surprised. Living in New York City, all of my friends were around my age range. We were all creative. We were all highly ambitious, all very successful. And when I moved here, I realized, oh my goodness, I could count on one hand the number of people that are in their 30s. And everyone else is not. And, you know, it's interesting because as we talk about hierarchy and erasure and who gets to be included in stories and who doesn't, we also generally exclude elderly people from that conversation.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and I ran into a neighbor at the grocery store, as you do in the Berkshires, last week. And she said to me, you know, I haven't seen you in the neighborhood. She said, one has to know their neighbors.
Uh-huh.
And that just hit me deeply because, one, she hasn't seen me in the neighborhood because I had a very busy work summer, so I wasn't here often. But it was also this beautiful charge that, no, the people that are around you, that is now your community. And it's okay that they're not 30-something-year-old entrepreneurs who want to conquer the world, you know, one venture at a time. But there's so much to learn from them because also these people that live here, they are rock stars. Like, they did incredible things in their lives, and now they're in a season where they're resting and they're enjoying. And so I'm learning from the community that friendship looks so different than it did in New York City, and the kinds of activities, you know, in New York City, I'd love to go find a new restaurant and go see the latest exhibition at the Met. And now it's like, no, we're going paddleboarding. And it's really delightful. And so I'm continuing to tell myself to lean into this new space and to learn. One of my friends, Alexander, I went over to his house yesterday because he and his husband had their final like crop of their dahlias come up for the season. And they're like, please rush over quickly. We've got to cut the dahlias, you know? And I'm like, in what world is this now my life that my evening activity is dahlia cutting? But I will take it, and I love it.
I love it too. I feel like as an immigrant, I struggle with the notion of home, sense of belonging, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because there are so many places I could call home, but none embody what I actually feel or who I have become. For me, Lahore is home where I grew up, but then New York is home. Boston could be home because that was the first city we came to when I came to the US, and then I lived in Denver. I feel like I'm a nomad now, where no single place entails what home should be, and yet so many places warrant that. And as a Black gay artist living in the US, you probably have a different relationship with sense of belonging and identity, right? I wonder how restoring this home, reconciling, owning history, parts of it, however challenging they are, have redefined your sense of belonging in this society that we live in?
I think it is about belonging to self.
Ah, I love that.
Right? Because as we get to the end of the show on episode 6, it's when we are looking at the ravine on my property and we're talking about its connection or its not connection to the Underground Railroad. And we're talking about the freedom seekers. We do not say runaway slaves, the freedom seekers that were coming through Massachusetts. We talk about, were they using the train tracks across the street or were they not? And what I have learned in this process is that it's us saying yes. It's us saying yes. It's us saying, whatever happened, I say their name and I carry them with me. Right? You carry your history and your lineage with you. So it doesn't matter where you are planted, because wherever you are, they are.
Yeah.
And so it is an accepting of self that I am worthy of this moment. I am worthy of, I don't even want to say this space, but I am worthy of living. And that it doesn't matter about the space, because then it glorifies four walls versus honors the breath in our body. That's home.
Oh my gosh, I never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
That's so beautiful.
If all of this went away, would I be sad? Oh, of course. Like, that was a lot of work. And also, my God, what I have inside of me, you can't take that.
Yeah.
Right? Period.
If Holmes could speak, what do you think your home would say about its past owners?
I think it would say about its past owners, what inventive people you were. I do have a deep sense that, you know, I think it's very unfair for us to judge people's actions with a 2024 lens, with a 1822 world.
Yeah.
Right? It's an evolution, right? And so I think for that time, I think these walls would say, when you look at this family originally being built for the Russell family, and then Dr. Leavenworth and his family taking over this home, the fact that there are two doors, one door being to a doctor's office, one being to a family residence. I think this home would speak of, wow, there are 13 people here. That is a large gathering of people. You know, I think it would say that they did love family, that they did deeply believe in healing, being in that medical profession at that time, and the fact that this home then became the Visiting Nurses Association and then a community. This home was a community health center for well over 50 years. And so I think that the walls would say people were trying with the knowledge that they had to heal and to help. And so I think it's why people like me and my friends and my family that now come here come and feel that something special and magical is happening here, because even in its very complicated way 200 years ago, it was happening as well.
How do you want your chapter of ownership to contribute to this ongoing story?
That people see this story and say yes to ownership in their way. I don't want people to look at this home and say, oh, I could never own a 200-year-old home. But I hope that they see this home and they see what I've done and say, wow, what could my next action step look like? So one of my friends, Giovanni, just came to visit 3 weeks ago, and he comes out of the guest bathroom and he goes, babe, oh my gosh, the wallpaper in your bathroom is out of control. He's like, I've never seen a bathroom like that. And he said, I've always wanted to have a vibrant bathroom. And he said, but I could never own a home in New York City. I said, but do you have a bathroom? And he said, yes. I said, then you have an opportunity. So the next day, I take him back to Hudson. He takes the train back to New York City. And he then goes to Benjamin Moore. And he sends me these paint swatches. And he gets a can of paint. And he paints his bathroom this electric color that brings him so much joy. And I'm like, that's why I did this, right? It's not about other people going to go buy these 200-year-old homes that just, you know, the renovation goes on for years, but it is, in what way will you give yourself permission to say yes to color, permission to say yes to your dream, permission to say yes to whatever is calling your heart?
I come from a culture that celebrates color in all its forms, right? Like, I see so much vibrancy in our culture, in our food, music, clothes. People are afraid of color. In the U.S.
Yes, they are.
Why do you think?
I think they're afraid of celebration. When you look at your culture, so much of the color is based around celebration, whether it be the fabrics and the colors that the different families wear at the weddings that signify who they are. The aunties wear one fabric that, you know, it's like, and it is, it's a commitment to be seen. And I think here in this culture, people are afraid to feel good. And I think when you come from a culture that has had to work in a different way, you really celebrate the moments that you get to celebrate. But I also think as people of color, we also bring celebration and color into our everyday, which is the complete opposite of how America was built and how our current America works.
Robert, what is next for you? Is there a project that you're working on other than a book?
Yes. So what is amazing are those moments that you get to come back to yourself. And while I was renovating the home, I hit burnout so many times. Mm. And my first company was the Broadway Collective. And we worked with young people, 12 to 18, who had a dream of Broadway. And we'd give them singing and dancing and acting lessons across the country and in New York City. And I put the company on pause about a year and a half ago so I could finish the renovation and truthfully not lose my mind. And a few weeks ago, I just started to feel that tug at my heart that it was time to get back in the dance studio and start training young people again and start allowing that dream to come alive. So this fall, I'm going on a national tour
where
I'm going to bring Broadway performers from New York City to cities across the country and bring that love of Broadway to these young people and their parents, because it's musical theater education that allowed me to have a career on Broadway, to then build a company, to then build a home and a TV show. It all started with the permission for education on this dream. And so that is the thing I'm most excited about this fall, is bringing the Broadway Collective and this tour back out.
And in the end, if you were to define the United States of America in a word or a sentence, how would you do that?
That it's a place of possibility. I do actually believe that when we come together and when we actually are not only at the table, but our voices are actually making it into policy and reform, I do believe a lot is possible in this country. And for that, I am deeply grateful. And I think many people in this country have had a very complicated relationship with this country, especially, I'd say, over the last decade. And because of that, I have never had such a renewed sense of hope for what is possible when we vote.
Well, that's true. Although our choices are limited. And I have thoughts on that, but we won't go there. I guess as a Muslim woman living in this country, I have a lot of thoughts right now. But, we could have another podcast about that.
Our next episode.
Next episode, right?
Yes.
Where can people find your work? And your show is on HBO Max, right?
Yes. So you can follow me on Instagram at Sir Robert Takes Picks, and you can also watch Breaking New Ground season 1. All 6 episodes are currently streaming on Max.
I love it. Thank you so much, Robert. This was wonderful.
This was such a beautiful conversation, and I really, from my entire heart, I say thank you for such beautiful preparation and for such loving questions. This was very special.
Before I say anything else, let me say this. The grace, the generosity, the love with which Robert conducted himself during this interview, I was blown away. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation beyond our normal questions around race and identity. It taught me a lot about patience and how to be more gracious towards people who may not deserve it. You know, when we think about how things impact us, how people treat us, a lot of times there is this anger, this resentment towards those people. Imagine flipping the script on that. And believe you me, it's not easy. I don't think I have done that in the past. But it's always good to try to bring that side of one's personality out. Let that generosity, that leniency, that love shine through. Because I saw it in Robert's eyes and it was beautiful. This episode was produced by me, Sadia Khan, written by me. The editorial review is done by Shay Yu. Our editor and sound designer is Hazik Ahmed Farid. Theme music for Immigrantly is done by Simon Hutchinson. Other music by Epidemic Sound. Until next time, take care. And don't forget to follow us on our socials and check out our website at immigrantlypod.com.